welcome to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're
TNT.
Hi, you coughed out a lung before we went on air. Are you all right?
Yeah, it's one of those deals, you know, you're sick 3 weeks ago, but the symptoms don't go away.
Yeah, that's our new reality.
Oh, geez. And having a kid in school, it's just been nonstop.
Yeah.
I talked to a doctor fairly recently, and he basically said, no one's going to be more glad than I am when school's over because it's a revolving door of kids apparently in the clinic and stuff.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. There's like 2 year backlog from COVID.
Ooh. Yeah. I guess. So it seems like we have a few things to celebrate today. I wonder, maybe we should grab a beverage of some kind.
Grab a beverage. All right. Let's pause for a beverage pickup. Okay. Dealy bomber.
1, 2, 3, go.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Jesus, you must live in the largest trailer in existence. Where did you go? Did you go to the beer store?
It's a double wide, baby.
Wow. That's maybe actually I should come visit wide. You there. It's sounds a like I have wide. My own wing there, maybe.
So your chic cabin on the lake is what, one room with a little micro fridge or something? It took you 2 seconds
Ouch.
To get your beer.
Wow. Well, it happens to be right next to me. That was helpful.
Oh, okay. That is helpful.
We can brag about our square footage at another time, Ty.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to measure. Right, well,
what do you got going there?
What, beer-wise?
Yeah.
It's a Fat Tire. Belgian ale.
Yeah.
You ever hear of that?
No. Is that local?
No.
Well, Belgian. An actual Belgian or like Belgian style?
You know, that's actually a good question. I'm not 100% sure. The name would imply it's somewhere in the States, Fat Tire, but I really don't know. I've never had it, and it's pretty common here, though. You see it quite a bit, and it's not bad.
Okay. I have
Sapporo.
Exactly.
Was that Italian? Like... Yeah, Italians are famous
are you kidding
for their
me?
Beer. Yeah, good stuff.
Japanese, man.
Oh, cool.
You've never had a Sapporo?
No, I haven't.
Oh. It's an excellent beer.
Actually, I'm quite...
the I'm times pull a tie here.
Glug, glug,
I was supposed
glug.
To do the glug, glug, glug.
Actually, the times I've had Japanese beer, I've quite enjoyed it.
Delicious beer. Premium. It says it's premium.
Yep. And nice, nice can of beer. Yeah.
So what do you have to celebrate tonight?
Oh, yeah, well, just for starters, my semester's over, and that's a big one.
Yeah, I figured that was your big one.
Yeah, just last Friday was the last day, graduation Saturday, and then I had a meeting today that was just kind of, that was delayed from last week, and I am done, and done.
Amazing.
So you got something to celebrate?
Oh,
you're back to work.
Cottage is open.
Okay.
Yeah, opened the cottage on Friday. And it went well this year instead of it went really terribly last year, as you may recall. So that was good. I'm back to work with a new contract in the works after striking for a week and a half.
Yeah, week and a half strike.
Yeah.
So what kind of new stuff did you get in your strike, in your contract?
It was mostly wages, but there was some talk about remote work as well. Nothing too specific, but basically the idea being that if you don't need to be in the office, you can make a pretty good argument to work from home at least some days.
Okay, interesting.
So it's not like a right, but it's kind of like if an employer turns you down, if there's no good reason, then you have a little bit more of a recourse now.
Yeah, it's a big kind of fundamental issue for the email class.
Yeah.
Because people can get their work done in 3 hours and don't have to look busy.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, yeah, you can actually be, I actually think that the hybrid is kind of the best model because I think, I mean, in my job, sometimes you need collaboration and sometimes you need time to focus. And if you're not getting that time to focus, I think your work suffers. So it's obviously easier to do at home if, you know, you don't have screaming children or whatever.
It's true. And as for me, online classes, no thank you.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that they liked that model.
If COVID didn't do anything else for us, it was expose online education as an inferior country cousin of actual face-to-face classes.
Yeah.
Good old-fashioned classes.
Yeah.
Where you're interacting with people. I mean, there's a couple of keys about that. But if it's a class you need and you need to learn something from it, people hate them.
Right.
If it's a box you can check, then they can deal with it and it's easy or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, people you would expect would be all about online hate it too. And mm-hmm. So it's everyone learns. It's like, oh, this is miserable.
Yeah. What's the deal? I mean, as a professor these days with all the chat GPT and all that stuff, like how's that impacting you?
Oh, that's now we're into uncharted waters there.
Yeah.
Although it's, you know, it's always a cat and mouse game of, okay, now you can detect it and there are already ways to detect it.
Okay.
But for several months, it was, you couldn't detect it at all.
Really? And they've already come up with something.
And of course they would. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but I got, you know, I definitely got a chat GPT paper. It's like, no, this person did not write this. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty obvious. It's an interesting thing. It's sort of like, don't quite know how to deal with it yet.
Yeah. It was the part that kind of scared me was when people like Elon Musk are like, oh, we should take a little break from this for a while. I'm like, if Elon Musk is saying that, I mean, you know, he's got his own agenda possibly as well, but it wasn't just him.
It was exposed. He had his own secret artificial intelligence program, but he also changes his mind vocally about every other day on every subject.
Yeah, but it wasn't just him. There were, you know, I would say some more reputable people who were like, okay, we need to slow down on this stuff because it just exponentially grew into something kind of scary.
The potential for serious disruption is there.
Yeah.
If you think about the types of jobs that could be lost, it could be tremendous. How it could affect the political economy could be huge.
Yeah.
In fact, how do I know you're not just artificial intelligence at this point?
You don't. We could just get the AI to do our podcasts.
Yeah. Let's you know, type in keyword, hit songs from Mars.
People wouldn't know, though, because it would be much smarter than we are.
That's true. It wouldn't get stuff wrong and all of that stuff. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's wild stuff.
Right. It is wild stuff. I mean, curiously enough, one of the things I assigned my environmental history course was the Unabomber Manifesto.
Hmm.
And what the funny part was, it's the students didn't know that that's what they were reading. And right. But he had AI nailed 30 years ago.
Mm.
It's in there. I mean, it's a 35,000 word essay. I mean, it's a long rant.
Hmm.
And certainly don't condone his approach.
I would hope not.
Oh, God. No, I mean, when I see some of those, you know, those the documentaries of him, it's like, you know, professors getting, you know, mail bombs and stuff. It's like, you know, that's the guy down the hall, you know. I almost take that personally.
Yeah.
All right, well, what do you got for us today on the music front?
All right, Ty, here we go. trying to think if I should come up with any kind of
cleverness,
clever little pun,
fiendish cleverness.
But I think maybe I already have. Dun dun dun.
All right, pun is the pun. All right.
Are you ready?
Roll 'em. Mr. Roboto.
Hey, you got it right away. God, you're good at that.
This is fun. This is a good one.
That's quite the lead in.
Oh, yeah. This is legend. This is legend. Oh.
You're wondering who I am. All right. Ty.
Interesting choice, Tom. Interesting choice indeed.
You know this this band?
Styx.
Styx, yes. Were you a Styx fan? Are you a Styx fan?
No, I was never opposed to them in any way. But I was never a fan either.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you go through a Styx phase?
You know, I didn't think so. But I do recall as a kid the Grand Illusion album was in my household. I have a feeling that was my sister's record. I think it was Jane's record.
That makes sense. I mean, their sort of musical peak would have been late 70s, and she would have been a little older.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so, okay, well, I'll just go into a little bit of history here. So obviously this song is Mr. Roboto.
Domo, domo.
from Styx's 11th studio album. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that.
Kilroy Was Here was the name of the record, and released in 1983, in that weird, weird, weird pocket. I feel like we could write a book about 1982 and 83 and how everything went crazy at that
Absolutely.
Time.
Yeah, that was like, you know, if a shooting star is a hit song from Mars, that's the Leonids.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Or the Perseids, or if you prefer.
Yeah, exactly. So it was written by Styx member Dennis DeYoung, and it went to number 3 in the U.S. and number 1 in Canada. And
okay.
Weirdly, not that big a hit elsewhere, except for West Germany, which was number 8.
But that's from all the military bases from the U.S. there.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the whole story of Dennis DeYoung is pretty interesting. We're going to get into it as we go, but, he was for sure the hit maker of the band. He wrote, 7 of their 8, top 10 singles. Tommy Shaw, the guitar player, wrote, the other one, which was, Too Much Time on My Hands. You know that song?
Absolutely. That's their rockin'est one.
Yeah, it's pretty rocking. I mean, we'll get into this a bit, but Tommy Shaw was definitely a little bit more of a rocker than Dennis.
Yeah, Dennis almost doesn't belong in. I mean, he's on one extreme of rock and roll.
Yeah,
he's like art rock.
Yeah. So the band basically came together in the late '60s in Chicago, one of my favorite cities in America. I felt like you were going to comment there, but you decided not to.
You're already getting the pronunciation down, Pat. So
okay, right. And after a few different band names, they settled on Styx in 1972 with the release of their first record on Wooden Nickel Records. of course, the name Styx comes from Greek mythology. Is this a field of, do you know, can you tell us?
I mean, I know the basics. The river Styx is, you know, the gateway, so to speak, between this world and Hades. You pay the Grim Reaper type figure with the carrion and he takes you across the river.
Right. That's all you got?
Well, would you like a discourse on...
No, that's pretty good. That's stop now. That's good. So the original members, of course, Dennis DeYoung, who was on keyboards and vocals. He actually started on accordion.
That
was his first instrument. John Kurlewski on guitar and vocals. And the brothers Chuck Panozzo on bass and John Panozzo on drums. And James Young, who later became just JY for some reason.
Is he a brother or sibling of Dennis D?
No. It's confusing. They're just...
It's D Young, and the other one's just Young.
Yeah, that's it. So maybe that's why he goes by JY to avoid confusion. I don't know if you've seen any videos of the band lately or anything, but he has the best hair.
I haven't seen a Styx video in ridiculous. 40 years.
It's ridiculous. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the whole history of the first 10 albums because, you know, that would take us hours and we're already in our late session here.
Yes, indeed.
I guess their first real hit was Lady. Do you know that song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's actually kind of like a tie-ism where it came out and then nothing really happened. And then it wasn't like years after, but I think it was like a year after some DJ in Chicago started playing it. And it just kind of came back into the public eye and then became a big hit for them. And a lot of people say it's the first power ballad.
I mean, I'm sure we could find, we'd have to define power ballad, and I bet we could find earlier ones, but...
Challenge.
All right.
I'm going with this. I think it's, I wouldn't be surprised if it is, it would be, I guess, around 73, I think.
Was it that early? No kidding.
Yeah.
I think it was on their
second record. It was funny because in the 70s they seemed to put out a record every year, which seems amazing now, but I guess at that time that was normal. Some bands, I guess, in the 60s were putting out multiple records in one year.
Yeah, strange. Yeah, just the amount of production was less, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And so the single Lady was actually about DeYoung's childhood sweetheart turned wife, who he's still married to.
No kidding.
Which is, yeah, crazy. So I think Dennis is the romantic in the band.
Yeah, he seems to be that way. The very sensitive, like hypersensitive, in fact. Kind of, or at least early on, starry-eyed type dreamer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Desert Moon. Remember when he went single for like a right mm-hmm. at maybe Styx had broken up by then, but he had a sort of a summer hit called Desert Moon.
Yep.
And it was just him. And he talks about We Were Dreamers Under Desert Moon or whatever.
Yeah. Oh,
summer nights when we were young. You can edit all that out if you want.
Oh, no. I think that was fantastic. We can check see how your pitch was on that.
Check the pitch, baby. Summer nights when we were young. We bragged of things we never done. We were dreamers. Only dreamers. And in our haste to grow too soon, we left our innocence on desert moon. We were dreamers.
So... What's your favorite power ballad of any era, not just from this era?
I'll just tell you what popped right into my head when you asked the question. Still Loving You by the Scorpions.
Oh,
that's as power ballad as it gets.
It really is, yeah.
Because, I mean, when Rudolph comes in with that, hey, you know, before Klaus launches into his power, I mean, it's boom! I mean, you really feel the power there.
I have to say it's kind of a guilty pleasure, but I think I'm going with November Rain.
Okay. Interesting.
That's a pretty crazy song. I mean, because of the video is kind of crazy.
Right. At the time, it was the most expensive video ever made.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like, yeah, at the time, I don't know, maybe it's held that. I doubt it.
I find that the images in that video are just forever stuck in my mind. Like, I can just picture all the scenes. It's like weirdly iconic.
I remember little bits and pieces of it. Was there like a girl's body in a coffin?
Yeah, well, yeah, like something tragic. I don't remember exactly, but something, there's the wedding, and then something tragic happens, and then she dies, and then it gets all heavy, and there's the violins.
Yeah, I know, it's like teen drama. I mean,
it really is.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, there's endless helicopter shots of Slash doing his posing with the cigarette and the big top hat in front of a church or something.
Oh, like yeah, that. Yeah. That's the best. It's funny because I don't even think it happens, but I created my own narrative around that video where he comes out of the church and he throws his guitar over the cliff. But okay. I don't actually think that happens.
You know,
like, where did I come up with that?
I might have seen the video once in my life, maybe twice.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, I never watched a lot of videos ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. I do remember those little tidbits, though.
Yeah.
So November Rain, the power ballad. Okay, at least you fessed up to it. It's a Guns N' Roses song.
Anyway, back to Styx.
Right.
So I think there were tensions starting to happen in the band, as we sort of mentioned, that I think both Tommy and JY were sort more into the rock and roll. They wanted a little bit more of a rock edge, and Dennis DeYoung was kind of on his own with the ballads. But the thing is that he was the one with all the hits. So I think there was a little bit of a power imbalance there. And he, at the same time, is kind of writing softer songs. Like, obviously, like Babe is like that's, I just, you know, as soon as it, as when I was doing research for this, as soon as I came on, I was like, Babe, what's that song? And I was like, oh, it was like grade eight dance. Like, that was like, besides Stairway to Heaven, that was like the slow dance song at the, they played like maybe second last before Stairway to Heaven.
This, I'm envisioning you off in the corner by yourself, trying to get up the courage to ask. Oh.
Yeah, ask. Well, that's it. Or just like demanding scorpions or something.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, rock you like a hurricane and everything's all sad.
I was a shy boy, though. That's for sure. It was very hard for me to ask a girl to dance.
Yeah, I mean, most of us went through that.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, definitely Dennis DeYoung was heading mellower and mellower, and I guess he was very difficult to work with.
Yeah,
like a bit of a hypochondriac. This, that, I mean, everything just had to be just so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get into that. I might just defend him a little bit. We'll see.
Okay.
So, yeah, so this was starting to become an issue, but again, because he was kind of taking creative control of the band, and he really kind of got his way. In 81, they released Paradise Theater, which is like a concept album, which is kind of on the surface based on this once beautiful concert, you know, theater, basically, that was sort of falling apart. And it's supposed to be an allegory for the state of the U.S. at the time, apparently.
I know you feel these are the worst of times. I do believe it's true. When people lock their doors and hide inside, rumor has it it's the end of paradise. But I know.
It was their most successful album to date.
Right.
And so it sort of bolstered him in that sort of more theatrical kind of direction. So then, which led up to in 1983, Kilroy was here. And, you know, the whole Kilroy thing, like, do you know anything about the historical stuff about Kilroy? It's
a little
bizarre.
A little bit. It had to do with a U.S. serviceman living in Japan named Kilroy, or he wrote the stuff on the weaponry on the airplanes. I can't remember the details.
Yeah, well, but it just started showing up in graffiti all over the place, which was really weird. But no one seems to have a really clear grasp on what it was about, which is really strange.
Yeah, just someone randomly writing that on there.
Yeah, it's kind of like the original meme.
Yeah, there you go.
we can explain to kids that no, memes weren't invented 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know if this is part of your research, but the tour for Kilroy Was Here was a complete fiasco.
Oh yeah.
Were you going to go into that?
Oh yeah, we'll go there.
Okay.
But it sounds like you have some stuff to add.
Well, yeah. I mean, you had, all right, well, I don't want to steal your thunder here, but I will. Anyway.
Sure.
Basically, okay, so the way I remember this is they were on a package tour. I can't remember all the names on it, but it was basically just rock and roll party all day, you know, drink yourself into oblivion. And Styx did not fit in with the bill, even though they were like second billed or maybe top billed. I don't even know.
Okay.
But for the first, so, you know, you get all these rockers out there and everyone's going crazy and all that. The beginning of the Kilroy Was Here tour, they had a 20-minute interpretive play in which some douchebag dressed as a robot would go out on stage for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And they were just booed and booed and booed.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's like Weird Al couldn't have tried and succeeded to get booed to the extent that they were getting booed off the stage.
It's a weird thing though, because if you watch, there was a live film or something about that tour. I think it's called Caught in the Act. And because there's a video, if you find that, you'll find that on YouTube. It's not the booing, it's not the booing version. It's the adoring version. So, that's pretty interesting. And I guess what happened was that's actually what led to Tommy leaving the band. Apparently they got so booed and eventually he smashed his guitar and walked off stage and said, and that's it. And he quit at that point. So.
Yeah. It was a shows in Texas, which did them in, maybe in some venues that would be more sympathetic to something like that, it went fine.
Yeah.
But they didn't change the act. Just go out there and sing the songs. That's what people want. And I mean,
yeah.
the douchebag in a robot bit was, I mean, it's painful to watch. Yeah. It was horrid.
Yeah.
I mean, what were they thinking?
Well, and it's funny because we've had this discussion before, of course. I think neither of us are a fan of anything choreographed when it comes to, well, especially me, anything choreographed when it comes to music. So I can certainly see Tommy being like, oh, no, I do not want to do that. He, you know, but the funny thing is that when you like they did a video, and you know, like, this is one thing, and I've seen some interviews with Dennis DeYoung, and he's like, everyone makes it out to be about Mr. Roboto and that you know, that acting or whatever, but he claims that it isn't. and he's like, they all agreed to do it, like they all recorded the song, they all, you know, they were in the video. There's a video that was played, aside from the theatrical stuff they did on stage, there's like a, have you seen the 15 minute video of the, it's like
I'm not remembering it, so maybe I haven't.
I'll play you. I just have some audio.
This okay. Kind of fun.
Abadoran and Charles Kilroy, you have persistently and flagrantly violated Code 672, which forbids the playing and purveying of rock music. You are convicted of the manslaughter of a member of the majority for musical immorality. You are hereby sentenced to life imprisonment.
Dads, I see the future. I see a future without rock and roll music. As I speak to you now, young people all over
their videos were, if I remember, they were kind of cutting edge. So it's just that tour was the wrong venue. They should have been on their own and going to places where people would be more appreciative of that kind of interpretive stuff, choreographed stuff and all of that.
Yeah. And actually, no, you're right. There's a guy by the name of Stan Winston who designed the costumes and masks and all that, of the Robotos. and he went on to work on the Terminator, Aliens, and Jurassic Park. So yeah, it was, but you know, it's kind of funny because I kind of, going into this, I didn't really know much about Styx. And then you kind of see these interviews, and it seems like there's so much tension around, you know, these different factions in the band or whatever. But when you see the videos, like they, when they're playing live, they're having fun. And when you see the videos, there's kind of tongue in cheek stuff, and which is pretty hilarious. Some of the songs are like, they're having fun with it. That's the part that, like, it's kind of made out to be like this huge rivalry or whatever. But actually, I was surprised to find that they seem to be having a pretty good time doing it. So
I got the impression it was both. It was a love hate thing that finally the hate took over.
Yeah.
But when they clicked, they were on, and when they didn't, it was just awful.
Yeah. Well, and probably, I mean, being booed by your fans, probably for Tommy, that was just enough, you know?
Right.
I think he knew, because he was kind of like, this is stupid, I hate this. And then when someone gave him the out, right, when the audience agreed, he was like, all right, I was right.
And he smashes his guitar, probably got the only cheering they heard that whole night.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure how they recovered from that.
Well, it left damage. Again, trying to remember here, but again, this Ted Nugent cycles back in yet again. Tommy Shaw will join the damn Yankees,
mm-hmm.
and which had surprising big hits. Yeah. I didn't care for the band, even though weirdly, at that time.
Weirdly soft ballads.
We don't need to talk about it anymore. Yesterday is just a memory. Can we close the door? I just made one mistake. I didn't know what to say when you called me.
And Ted Nugent, I watched the video last night. He looks like a crazy person. He looks insane.
Yeah, that's probably safe to say that he. I mean, full disclosure, I was a big fan as a teen.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
Yeah, and I'm really not now. But I did not like the damn Yankees. But Nugent, he had this need to be like a top 40 hit maker, and he never succeeded at it except for the damn Yankees.
Mm, yeah.
And the songs were weak in my opinion.
Yeah.
The albums weren't any good, but I guess, okay. So Tommy Shaw, Ted Nugent on stage together as the damn Yankees, which is a surprisingly big band.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do, Tommy would do the lead into Babe on his guitar.
Oh yeah.
And then Ted Nugent would come over and say, hey, Tommy, let me tune your guitar. Something's wrong with your guitar. He'd take it and smash it. The audience would go crazy. And I guess Dennis DeYoung was absolutely furious when he found out about that.
Yeah.
And so what, according to Tommy Shaw, they ran into each other a little bit later. They happened to be in an elevator together.
Ooh.
And
yikes.
Dennis confronted Tommy. He's like, look, if you basically said, if you want to hate me, that's fine. But let's, you know, the stuff we did and what we've done together, please leave that out of this.
But you know what? So Styx exists now without Dennis DeYoung, and they're playing all those songs of Dennis's songs. They're playing them all, and it's Gowan. Remember Lauren? Remember Gowan?
Moonlight Desires?
That's right.
These moonlight strange animal desires haunt me.
Yeah, so he's their singer. He has been for years now.
No kidding. That's
funny. And they sing all those songs. And I'm like, so I don't know. I'm kind of coming around to Dennis. I'm like, I don't even know how they can do that.
Well, he gets paid out the wazoo to let him do it, or somehow they got the rights.
Yeah, I that's shocking to me. So I don't know. Like, I'm starting to feel like these other guys are kind of dicks. And, you know, I started to watch Dennis. I'm kind of like, I can see he's kind of kooky, but I don't know. I actually find him to be pretty compelling.
I don't think anyone's going to deny the guy's talent.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's good and he's unique, and he has a certain niche in rock and roll. It's on the art side of it, the choreographed side of it, the ballad side of it.
Yeah.
But he's talented and he's good at what he does.
Yeah.
I'll side with the guys here.
Oh, okay.
Just to be contrarian. But no, I mean, it's like one of those things. Is it, you know, do people actually go out and see them? I mean, are they on the casino circuit? It's just like Journey without Steve Perry. That's another one that's happening.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's crazy.
It's just that it's too essential to the sound of the band. You can't just extract that.
Agreed.
I mean, sometimes it happens in the weirdest ways. I mean, it did. I mean, the Black Sabbath non-Ozzy stuff. I mean, Ronnie James Dio, very talented singer, but I think the plan there was, you know, they would produce enough albums with his sound and his voice that they could stop singing Iron Man.
Mm, yeah.
And they kind of reached that point when they ended. But I think it broke his heart to have to sing, you know, Paranoid and stuff like that. Yeah. But then you get AC/DC, you know, Bon Scott dies, Brian Johnson takes over, and it's bigger than ever.
Yeah. It's different when the person dies, though.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's kind of bad when you're, I don't know. I just found the whole thing about them. It's so hypocritical. They're like, oh, we hate your wimpy little ballads. And then they're playing them all on tour with Gowan singing, who's not as good a singer, by the way.
Oh, come on. You just listen to Moonlight Desires once, and you tell me he's can't match Dennis DeYoung. Give me a break. You stir my soul. Moonlight Desires.
You know that's not true.
Moonlight Desires was like an unrecognized masterpiece. Thank you very much. Here, I'm the American. You're the Canadian, ripping on the Canadian singer.
I'm shocked.
Of course, the biggest one of all is Sammy Hagar and Van Halen.
Yeah, where do you stand on that?
Well, good God, that's an easy one. I mean,
it's not for a lot of people.
Well, this is like a parallel of what we're talking
about.
It's
easy for me. I still don't even know who you're siding with because it's a lot
of people.
You
gotta be kidding me.
No, I don't.
No, there's no discussion on this. Yeah, I mean, no, you can cut off at 1984 and that's just fine with me. It never worked.
I agree with you. But some people actually love that era. One of my bandmates, Peter, he loves it. And I think he's crazy.
Yeah.
Talk about it all the time.
He's probably just poking at you.
No, that's your job, Ty.
Yeah, fair enough. No, the thing is, Sammy Hagar, like solo, that he was pretty darn good at what he did. If you listen to those, like those 1983 stuff, I mean, even before I Can't Drive 55, he really had a thing going. But it never worked. The combination never worked. And it always felt like Sammy Hagar was trying too hard and it made it worse. Yeah! But that's another example. Both the David Lee Roth era, Eddie and the Van Halen brothers, both accused the other one of wanting to go pop. Mm. And then, you know, they have 1984. David Lee Roth leaves the band, and then
did he leave or was he kicked out?
This is an ongoing debate, which probably he was pretty much booted.
Yeah.
But then the band goes completely mainstream top 40.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of, I think they all kind of wanted to go in that direction. Everyone seemed pretty happy with 1984. It seemed like, you know,
it was a fair enough on board. Compromise because it had some real rockers on it.
Yeah.
I mean, Panama's a real rocker. Top Jimmy's a great song. That's probably one of my favorite Van Halen songs. Hot for Teacher is unique in how many, it's top 40, but yet it's got this 1 minute drum intro.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so,
they're an amazing band and Eddie's incredible. You know, I think we have probably talked about this, but I just like his rhythm playing, you know, like everyone goes on about his leads, but he's just such a natural swingy player, and when you listen to the, you can listen to those isolated tracks or whatever, he's playing every, like he's like interweaving all the lead stuff with the rhythm, like in the same track. He you know what I mean, he lays it all down in one take and it's perfect.
It was amazing. And if you want a really good example of that, on the first album, one of the songs that's sort of less known, but it's one of the best ones on there, in my opinion, is I'm the One.
Oh, yeah.
And that's basically, I mean, he's so over the top in that.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. That's basically Eruption set to the whole band.
Mm-hmm.
He's just letting it all out.
Yeah,
but the rhythm stuff that he intersperses, just what you're talking about, it's amazing.
Yeah. I know. It's such an interesting touch he has, you know. We gave it a hand.
know, truly a unique talent, and you know, very much everyone imitated him, but yet no one could quite pull it off.
No. You know, it's funny because I listened to a podcast a while ago with David Lee Roth. He's a really interesting guy. He, at one point, he was he was like volunteering to be like a paramedic in New York City. Did you hear about that?
Well, yeah. It can you imagine, you know, getting put in an ambulance, putting into an ambulance, and there's David Lee Roth. You're suddenly in a Van Halen video, like you're in hot for teacher. Sit down, yeah, exactly. Waldo.
Yeah, exactly. Getting back to Mr. Roboto, I can't believe how much stick stuff I've been watching to prepare for this, but I watched an interview with Dennis DeYoung, and he's kind of talking about the origins of Mr. Roboto. There are kind of two things that happen on Paradise Theater. One of their songs called Snowblind.
I remember that one.
Yeah. It's actually about like the perils of cocaine use. One of those like super right wing church groups, accuse them of, backmasking. You know, that's like when you play it backwards. And, I think they said that the opening line was Satan speaks through us or something. If you play it backwards. And it's funny because if you listen to Dennis DeYoung, he's like, it kind of does sound like that. We didn't do it, but.
Have you ever listened to stuff backwards?
No, I never have actually.
Yeah, another one bites the dust. If you play it backwards, it sounds something along the lines of, I like to smoke marijuana. And it's obviously just a pure coincidence. I smoke marijuana.
Yeah. But it seems like a lot of imagination, creativity and imagination is going into those.
There is one. I heard it. They definitely put it there on purpose. It is, I can't remember. It's a Led Zeppelin song. Hmm. I cannot remember what song it is. But Robert Plant clearly says, oh, here's to my sweet Satan.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's point blank, crystal clear. It's there.
Huh. But I don't even understand how you do that. Well, you're recording it like.
You play a tape playing backwards onto a microphone. It's
oh, yeah, okay. Actually, I've done that before. Well, I played a pedal steel part.
Did you put like Satan messages in it?
No.
In your voice
with
box?
My vocoder in my voice box. No, I wish I had actually.
Yeah, and in that era, they put little tidbits like Judas Priest in Love Bites. You can hear something clearly backmasked.
Yeah.
In Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind, there's a whole Bruce Dickinson does this like 1 minute backwards bit right before the song Still Life.
Okay.
It looks like we need a refill.
not me there, you lush.
All right, well, give me a minute. Get your thoughts together while I get my beer.
I'll try, sir. God, get yourself together. Must have moved the cooler closer to the door this time.
Well, it's after such fierce criticism, I sprinted the 200 meters to my fridge across my largest trailer in the world and
kicked
sprinted
the cat
back.
My mistake.
Yeah.
So back to the sort of the inspiration for this song. So part of it was the being accused of this, and so he started to imagine this world where rock was banned. In a futuristic place, and rock musicians were all imprisoned, and this sort of thing, which becomes sort of part of the video. But then also, at the same time, he was watching a documentary about automation at that time and robots, and he cites there's this sort of they show this it's probably like an auto factory when robots first started taking over at auto manufacturers, and it's sort of like all these, there's one person kind of running all the machines, and then the person shuts all the lights off and then leaves, and then the machines keep going. So I guess that really stuck with him, the whole idea of, the robots are just taken over. And of course it did have huge implications for those former workers who were lost their jobs in that. So I'm going to draw your attention to some important lyrics from the song.
Okay.
You ready? So I think this is kind of like, to me, this is like the thesis of the whole song right here. What do you think?
Yeah, fair enough.
It's funny because, you know, in doing research for this, I think a lot of people were like, well, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's contradictory. I'm like, I don't think it is at all. I think we've been lulled into this state where it's like, oh yeah, machines are great. They do the things that, you know, we don't want to do or whatever. But I do think we're getting dangerously closer to becoming machines ourselves. And it troubles me.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, it's, you know, an auto factory robot is so quaint.
Mm-hmm. You know,
by comparison, 40 years later.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, you know, because it reminds me of, you know, there's a lot of racism here too, right? there is that era, right, where there's all those songs like just sort of throwing out, it was like, I mean, racism or like fetishization or whatever, it's like, you know, turning Japanese and like all these songs.
Oh, well, the 80s, you could let it fly in those days.
Yeah. But it's weird too, when I think about, there's this huge thing, like in the guitar world, it's like, oh, American made guitars. Like that's the thing, right? Like it has to be
fucking
American. Right. And, and it's actually so racist. Like it, and people would be like, oh, you're not going to buy a Jap job or whatever. I remember a guy, at my parents' cottage, and he referred to us as those people who drive Japanese cars. this is a few years ago. So I don't know. That's pretty crazy. And which is, the funny part is, of course, we all know now that Japanese cars are much better. Ty, sorry to say it.
I guess it depends on the car.
Well,
yeah. No, I mean, I think, there was a lot of fear.
Yeah.
About the Japanese in the 80s. I mean, that they were really going to take over the financial world, the economic world. It just did not happen.
Yeah.
Now you see it with China. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, take, you know, scratch off Japan, put China, although it's a much bigger threat because it has tremendous resource capabilities. And Japan never did. That was always its problem.
Yeah.
It's
this, you ever been to Japan?
Never.
No, me either.
Yeah, I'd love to go sometime.
Yeah, me too. I have some friends who live there. Sounds like such an interesting culture.
Yeah, it'd be pretty alien to, I'm sure, what we're used to.
Yeah. It's funny because my friends who worked there, they're a couple, and he's tall and skinny and she was blonde. And literally they would be like walking down the street and people would be like turning their head to the point where they would fall off their bike. Cause I guess I think that was a while ago, but I think foreigners would stand out so much that it would draw a lot of unwanted attention a lot of the time.
Right. You definitely, draw attention, to be sure, at the very least.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, that's where it gets tricky, though. The same thing happened. Remember the Yugo?
What's that?
It's a car.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, made in Yugoslavia. I mean, the same thing happened. It was supposed to be this, this cheap, dirt cheap alternative to Detroit. It right. never flew because it was a piece of junk, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
But again, if you went through Detroit in those days, you'd see graffiti, "Down with Hugo Fest, down with Hugo Fest," on every overpass and things like that.
Wow.
So, I mean, where does it become, you know, where is it racism or much more, you know, just looking out for economic interests? Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets tricky today, too. Everything's branded. If it's not, you know, pro-globalization stuff, it's branded as racist, but there may be real issues being discussed there. Mm-hmm. So it gets tricky, to be sure.
So any final words on Mr. Roboto?
Well, it's an interesting song from an interesting era. I certainly enjoy it when I hear it.
This is something that was a surprise to me, is how much I enjoyed it on repeat listens. I actually, I think it's a pretty good song. It's very catchy. I don't know, like, da, 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 da. It's a pretty, I don't know. I mean, he's Dennis DeYoung. He's just like the king of drama, right? And
yeah, he's very theatrical. That's the best way to describe him.
Like, I'm trying to figure out, who are the Styx people, you know? They're such a weird band, and I didn't know much about them at all until going into this, and they're so odd.
It's an odd combination.
There's like kind of like Journey, but they're not really like Journey, and they're not really like Queen, you know? Queen's kind of
But they're in the same version. Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
So Queen's a better version, you say?
Oh, much better.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it put it on the art rock part of the spectrum, the rock and roll spectrum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get, because they were basically prog rock in a way, or like prog ballad rock. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I'm trying to think of some of their other hits that you always hear. Yeah, too much time on my hands. Again, the most rocking of them.
Yeah.
There's certainly, These Are the Best of Times, you still hear from time to time. That was a good one.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a really funny song that JY sang and wrote?
Yeah, go for
Kilroy
it.
From Kilroy Was Here? All right, here we go.
Were there any other hits on that album?
Don't Let It End.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, you know, actually that was supposed to be the first single. Actually, Dennis DeYoung's wife and his best friend convinced him that Mr. Roboto would be a hit single. And he was very reluctant.
So I could see that.
Right. Yeah.
No, it was a book.
Don't Let It End is like classic Styx. Like that's
That's right. It could have been on
Styx. Yeah,
and very dramatic and theatrical. Don't Let It End This Way. Yeah, but I'm not sure. Yeah, Mr. Roboto, does it stand the test of time? Or is it encased in the liquid amber of 1983?
Well, it's interesting because kids still know it. Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto, that's like, that is just in the DNA of the world. it's kind of just kitschy and... I don't think it really stands the test of time, but you can't argue. It's still being used in films and movie, like everywhere, you know?
There's certain songs out there that never leave the airwaves. Mm-hmm. When they appear, they never go away. Horse with No Name.
Yeah.
It's still just played as much as it was the week it was released. It's kind of incredible.
You know what's funny about that song is I thought that was Neil Young for probably most of my life.
Yeah, that's a
I just assumed it was Neil Young.
Yeah, typical Canadian thing, just to lay claim to something and call it Canadian. Canadians do that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you don't do that at all? Like,
no, we don't have to. We don't have to.
Really? All of the biggest comedians ever pretty much are Canadian? You guys don't even
all of them.
It.
Okay.
So many.
Okay, now the number's decreasing here. Well, there's that guy. Yeah. You got some good ones. You'd have to have a sense of humor to get through a Canadian winter, I would think.
You know, I used to get really upset when I told people where I came from down in Los Angeles because I always got the same response. Canada? Wow. Must have been cold. Now I just go along with them.
Yes. Canada. It was a frozen, hostile wasteland. And there was much work to be done if we were to survive the elements. After boring a hole through the ice to find food.
What was it? What were you? Oh, yeah, you thought Neil Young sang Horse With No Name. Which is mildly amusing, I have to say.
It sounds like him.
It does not. Got...
There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sands and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky.
Yeah, well, that's funny. They call themselves America because, well, they're Americans, but they basically had never set foot in the United States. They were military brats living in England. And so they called their band America because it was like kind of like the, you know, the Pogues being Irish. They were trying to connect with their own roots.
I think they called themselves America because everyone just thought they were Neil Young and they needed to find some way to distinguish themselves.
What's Neil Young's citizenship these days? Oh, never mind. That's right. He sold his soul.
Actually, he was living in Canada recently. Ty, he might be right now. He moved out of your place.
Good.
I think during COVID, he moved back home to a cottage close to here.
Down the lake.
Daniel Lanois did too.
Oh, that's that producer guy you're so fond of.
Yeah, Leniel Denois.
The producer Tom likes. That's just the way I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, now, when did you realize America?
Or, God, you're really fixated on this.
Yeah.
Like you've never
thought
that.
It was like last week, wasn't it?
No, I was like, I don't know, maybe a few years ago.
I'm going to have to think about this one for a while. That's pretty good. But like, anyway, my original point, some songs never leave. They never go away.
Yeah.
And I guess Mr. Roboto would be one of them. Less so, but definitely would be.
It's almost like, I don't think it probably gets played on the radio as much, but it's in ads. And there's that famous Volkswagen ad that used it. And it's the list is pretty crazy, actually.
Dobo. ロボット産業社長のロボットと申します。私何かできることありましたら何でもおっしゃってください。
どうもありがとう、Mr. Roboto. I thank you.
すぐにやって、くるさって、ありがとうございます。
You speak Japanese?
A little.
Well, you might be a cunning linguist, but I'm a master debater.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, fine choice indeed for hit song from Mars. But like you said, it's during that era where it almost doesn't count because it was almost the rule.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, if you look at the top 40 list from 1982, 1983, the memorable stuff are the hit songs from Mars, but they weren't the majority by any stretch of the imagination.
It's true.
Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Hear, hear.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca and on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at MinoGraphics. That's MinoGraphics. You can connect with us on Twitter at Songs From Mars and at hsfm.buzzsprout.com.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.